Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday. I got two words today that I'm thinking of. Got a story to tell you. Guests lined up for segments 2, 3, and 4. We got MBD on in the second position. Sully, Bruins podcast host, will be on in the third segment. And we got the Pistol firing in the fourth. I know MBD and the Pistol have a brewing war of words going on between them. Pistol laid out the first shots yesterday, and I think MBD is going to try to respond to that. Let's see if these two can get some fired up. Sports Talk Radio to entertain all of you listeners today on the Sports Machine with Slim. I will do my best to get it started with a story that I debated whether or not I would tell this, but as I thought through it, I said, man, there's a little link there between the Celtics and the Heat series. And then I branched that even further into one of my two words of the day, which is being an underdog. The mentality of an underdog. And I thought back to game 3 of the Boston Bruins. And remember last year, we had the greatest season of all time in the regular season. The Boston Bruins went out in the first round. It's tough to have the mentality of an underdog in that first round series last year against Florida when you had the greatest regular season of all time and everybody thought you were going to be, the Stanley Cup champions. So you went into that first series, not saying that you weren't ready or anything like that. It's just, it's tough to have the mentality of an underdog. Well, this year, the Bruins had a good regular season, but nobody's afraid of them. We go into this first round series against Toronto. Hey, we're slight favorites. We win the first game at home. We lose the second. We go on the road at Toronto. And man, we're the underdog. Game 3 of this series, we were the underdog going into Toronto. Auston Matthews had scored that huge game-winning goal in game 2. Like, I was afraid, I guess is the word. I wasn't overly confident. I was hopeful. But we went in with the mind of an underdog, and we played with the passion and spirit in game 3 of an underdog. We didn't stop. Like, we were diving for loose pucks in the third period all over the place. I can remember 3 separate efforts where it was just next level trying to either, like, clear the zone or keep the puck in the zone. We're playing with so much effort and intensity, the entire team. Underdog mentality. Boston Celtics, man, we haven't had an underdog mentality with this team in years. And the Miami Heat most certainly have that underdog, bulldog mentality. And there's a ton of reasons why. And number one, to get the show started here, let me tell my story and then I'll come back and tell you a little something about the Miami Heat. The other day, I'm driving through the coffee line, the drive-thru at Dunkin' Donuts. And that's where money is the second piece of this. Okay, we got underdogs and money. So I'm driving through. It's my turn in line. I order whatever it is, a donut and a large decaf coffee. I can't drink caffeinated anymore. I get huge headaches. And I give a $20 bill to pay. I know most people don't use cash anymore. I do. I'm old-fashioned. Give a $20 bill. And the guy takes the bill from me, and he's counting out the change. And my total back was like, my total was $4 and something cents, whatever it was, 60 cents. So I'm expecting to get back, I'm sorry, it was $3 and change. My bad, $3 and change. So I'm expecting to get back $16 and change. Anyway, I see the hand kind of twitch as he's counting out the change to give to me. It took a little while. Like I'm right direct level with, you know, the change counter. And they're right in the window, right in front of it, doing it in front of me. So I see the hand twitch, and they're playing with the bill almost. So they get the money. They give me the coins first, and then they give me the dollars. And the way he handed the dollars to me, it wasn't straight open. It was kind of folded. He changed his hand angle at the very end. And I was like, I'm just in the middle of my day. I'm thinking my show. I'm sorry, at the beginning of the day, I'm thinking of my show, what I'm going to say. It's on the drive into work. And I take the cash, and I go to put it in my holder where I will put, you know, spare change like this and then spare bills for when I might need one for a coffee. I only had a 20 this morning. And I said, wait a second, I'm just going to look, which I never do. But something was odd there. So I look at the bills, 2 fives and a 1. And I'm like, son of a gun, isn't that weird how I just noticed that? So, hey, and they look over. I said, hey, yeah, I think he gave me the wrong change. And he responds, Oh yeah. There's a five missing. And I said, yeah, look, you only gave me 11. Because I didn't know what they were saying. If they're saying, like, I took the five or something, I'm like, no, you only gave me 11. And he immediately says, okay, he gets the five. And he gives me another five. And as he's giving to me, I said, yeah, I could kind of tell by your hand movement. I said, something was strange. It's like you did that on purpose. And the guy says, looks at me and says, no. I said, I know what you did. You did it on purpose. And, you know, that was the end of the interaction. I had already gotten my coffee. So the point is there, you know, some points in life, you become kind of trusting and you just regular habit. Okay, whatever. I'm not going to check the change back. And sometimes you say, well, wait a minute. You had a $20 and whatever. It's only $5 in this day and age. I mean, it's $4 and change for a gallon of gas nowadays, everybody. I'm at the gas pump this morning. I'm like, what did you do? It's $4.10. For the medium level of gas, like, well, prices are going away. So whatever, it's only $5. Dudes, you know, I don't have proof trying to steal the $5 from me, but in all probability, was trying to steal the $5 from me. I mean, there was a reason why I noticed the hand interaction, and then first time ever, I'm actually checking the amount. Well, an underdog would check the amount, right? The person that's the favorite that has enough money, that doesn't, whatever, it's only $5, I'm not even going to check, I'm just going to trust, just throw it in there. That's the mentality of, like, the favorite. That's somebody that has enough money and, whatever, I'm trusting it, it doesn't even matter. And that's the difference between the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are checking their change when they go through the drive-thru. The Boston Celtics are just getting back whatever you give them and just throwing it in their thing. They don't even care. Because, like, whatever, it's only $5. Until it gets to a Game 7, Jason Tatum gets hurt at the beginning of Game 7, and, you know, you're going home early and not going to the finals last year. The Celtics didn't check their change for three games to open the series last year. We're down 0-3 to the Miami Heat. We just thought we're going to win. We're just showing up. We got enough money. We got 20s. Here, let me just throw the 20s to you. Well, I got plenty of them. Here, okay, whatever you give me for change, let me just throw it back in there. The mind of an underdog is much different than that of a favorite. And I will tell you, people, this you can very much relate to the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat series from last year and for this year. But the Celtics overall, you know what their record last year was at home, the Boston Celtics in the playoffs? They were 5-6 at the TD Garden last year. You know what their record was on the road? 6-3. So people that are going to be tuning in tomorrow to watch Game 3 of the series, the Miami Heat and the Celtics, I guess I would say, hey, let's check our change. But I feel pretty confident we're going down there to get at least 1 out of 2, and we're probably getting 2 out of 2. We're better on the road. But let me tell you this on the other side to get back inside the mind of an underdog for the Miami Heat, who will check their change. All Eric Spoelstra needs to do is look at the playoff scheduling to get his team fired up. If you look at the NBA, they want to stretch out these series. Okay, they want TV ratings maximized. They want to make the most amount of money they possibly can for commercial sales. The Boston Celtics played Game 1 on Sunday against the Heat. We played Game 2 on Wednesday. Now Game 3 is tomorrow on a Saturday. Well, the Philadelphia 76ers and New York Knicks played Game 3 last night. What does that tell you? The NBA thinks the Celts Heat is going to be a quick series. They want to stretch this out. They don't want the Celtics to win 4 games in a row and then have to be sitting around for a week, or God forbid, a week and a half before they play their next game, their next series against somebody else. So they're trying to stretch out the days in between the games being played. That's because they don't think the Miami Heat have a chance to beat the Celtics. The NBA does not think the Heat can beat the Celtics. They don't think they can take them to a 7-game series. That's all you need to say for Eric Spoelstra. Look, the Knicks have already played Game 3. It was Thursday. Why are the Celtics waiting to play Game 3 until Saturday? All the other series, last night, the Los Angeles Lakers, three games. They lose again to Denver. They're down 3-0 in that series. I thought the Lakers might be able to have a chance, but no. You know why? And I'm going to talk about this with the pistol. D'Angelo Russell. How pathetic is that cat? I can't. The Lakers, like, you got some work to do over there. Whoever's in that front office signing D'Angelo Russell to a contract, fired immediately. I would bench D'Angelo Russell. And I don't care if that's bad vibes. I don't care if other players don't want to come to play for my organization. You're not playing in game four, dude. You're done. You're done here. Let's see what my brother Dave has to say when we come back from this commercial break. Motivation of an underdog and money matters. Let's talk about the Patriots draft, too. WKXL Radio, this is the Sports Machine with Slim. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Had a Twitter exchange last night with Kurt Warner. Yeah, I think it's the real guy. Actual Super Bowl champion, MVP. Took time out of his day to have a back and forth tweet session with little old me. You know what it centered around? His haircut. His hair. Because I saw a post on, I think it was NFL Network, a video post, and Kurt Warner was on there, and he's got to be 50 years old, right? I mean, they were in the Super Bowl playing against the Pats in 2001. He had to be 25, something like that. So, yeah, I guess he's probably 40, 45, between 45 and 50. Anyway, he does look kind of good. I will say this. Like, he's taking care of himself, but his hair had all this gel in it, and he's got the makeup, and it's just like, dude, I don't know. So my response, I just write whatever's on my mind when I see the video, and I write, Kurt Warner going a little too hardcore pretty boy with the hair, if you ask me. And to my disbelief, I get a response, actually, from Kurt Warner within a couple minutes to my post. He says, not sure what that means, but way too long. So he's admitting his hair is too long. I mean, it's got the gel, the hair's going in the different directions. And so then I go, not sure what that means, but way too long. So I respond, looking too Hollywood, almost like you're not even a real person. You sure you're not an AI and you just don't know it? And he says, you can just say you look good. It's okay. Ha ha. Yeah, there we go. I said, responds one more. I'm a Pats fan, but I've always been a fan of yours. LOL, you're probably right. I'm just jealous. Just please go easy on the makeup and hair gel moving forward. And he responds, I'll let my people know, but I don't apply them myself. So he's taking the easy way out. Come on, Kurt. You used to be bagging groceries, man, before you became an NFL quarterback. You gotta latch in and latch back onto your common man days. You can't be going in these makeup rooms and letting people put this crap all over you just so you can be shiny and looking like a fake person for the TV cameras. Yes, okay, you look good. Fine. In certain people's eyes. Not in mine, my man. Go natural. Let nature take its course and let the world see the real you. I'm going to respond back to him at some point. If anybody has a good tweet, I'm going to invite him on to the show and see if he wants to reconnect with like his just common man roots. At any point, I'm not sure the best way to do it. If you have an idea on what my message, now there's been 10 hours of radio silence between me and Kurt. I let him send the last tweet because that's the way to do it. If you're in relationships, you want to be with he who cares less, you know, wins. Or she who cares less wins. So let him send the last text with my mindset being, well, I'll maybe get back to him tomorrow. And see if the listeners want me to put a certain message on there. It would be cool to be interviewing Kurt Warner on this show, wouldn't it? That'd be a win. The Sports Machine with Slim. Let's look at speaking of winning and losing the Patriots. Last year, I mean, I just came to a point with the Patriots. It's like, dude, are they trying? I'm not sure. And we know I've given up on the Red Sox. I'm not giving up, though, on my brother Dave. My brother Dave's going to help me with this segment. Dave, what'd you think about Drake May going to the Patriots?
I think it was the least sexy, safest option on the board.
It gives them something to talk about in the community, sports radio, and all this stuff for the next couple of years, right? This high-profile young quarterback draft pick. You know what it also gives them, Dave? Some financial protection. Because here's the deal. I wanted them to take Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not sure if you still did either. But if you take Marvin Harrison Jr. and the team improves, what are you going to do at the quarterback position? You maybe have to sign a free agent. Well, a free agent signing of a quarterback, we see, is a ton of money. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons are paying all this money to Kirk Cousins, and they're paying so much, like, wait a second, we got to draft a quarterback in the first round this year, too. But nonetheless, if you draft Drake May, you get a real cheap player at the quarterback position for the next 3 to 4 years. I really think the Patriots organization is all about saving money right now.
Well, it's hard to dispute that with the decisions that they've made over the last several years, the information that's come out about their payroll, as people have really dug down into the weeds, you know, finding that they're in the bottom five for the last, whatever it is, 5 to 10 years. So of course, they're in business to make money. They've also been in business to win Super Bowls, which they've done. You know, now you're kind of coming to the crossroads. Right now, you're either going to have to spend some money, you're going to lose some fan base, or you better win without spending money, right? Like, that's, I think that's happening in New England now, and I think that's why they made the pick. I think typically they'd want to draft down, or they'd want to trade down, draft a little bit later, stockpile. I think now they've kind of been forced. Like, now it's time we have to start accumulating some real assets to try to win.
Well, let's see if Drake May can do it. I mean, I'll root for him. I'll watch some. I'm just not expecting an awful lot. You want to talk about the Patriots draft, NFL draft, or any other things? What about the pistol? You want to fire shots back at him from his comments from yesterday? What?
Well, I mean, I guess I could talk about the pistol for just a quick second. I mean, anybody who knows the pistol, whether it's through the 6 months you've been doing this show or their previous 50 years of interaction with him, understands that he's probably not an individual that you want to take any kind of recommendations from when it comes to predictions, right? And so what he has done is decided that it's easier to sit on his couch and listen to other people make predictions and then tear them apart when they're wrong, just like modern society. And that's okay. I don't hold it against you, Pistol. I'm secure enough in my picks that I will continue to pick away. And I just hope that you're betting all of my winners when I give them to you.
Yes, let's pick away at that scab from your Game 2 prediction of the Boston Celtics winning by whatever it was, 20-plus points, and I gave it to. I was right here with you. We continue to think more of the Celtics than we actually should, but what do you see moving forward here? Game 3, the Celts going on the road. You heard those stats. We're better on the road in the playoffs than at home, so what do you expect is going to happen here?
It's a mindset. It depends on what you get from the Celtics. Listen, that's the first time a number one seed has lost by 10 points, or any team, I should say, has lost by 10 points when they've been favored by 14 points or more in the last 50 years of the NBA playoff. Right? So it's an anomaly. That doesn't happen. Now, are the Celtics going to respond? I'd love to think they are. I mean, their talent level certainly says that they're much better than the Heat. I mean, is the Heat going to shoot 23 or 44, 52, 53% again, whatever it was, from three-point line? Like, those things probably aren't gonna line up. My best play in the next game would not be the Celtics, though, because I do think that the Heat are a little bit in their head. My best play would be the under in that game tomorrow. I think that there's going to be a big defensive effort from the Celtics. I think you're going to see them run Miami off of those three-point line shots. I don't think they're going to get any easy set foot, you know, set shots. You know, passes right to them while they're just waiting in the corner. So I think that that game is going to be played in the 180s tomorrow, well under the total.
Well, I'm hoping the Celts get both games because you'd like to be like, oh, go and get one on the road. But if we only get one on the road in Miami, I'm telling you, like, the likelihood that we'd come back and lose game 5 in Boston is very real. This Celtics team right now is just in a fragile state mentally, I believe.
I don't agree with that. I don't think the Celtics are going to lose one of the games in Miami. I think it's going to be a 4-1 final. But that said, I mean, again, that's tomorrow. The Celtics have to put forth a good effort. I think Miami, if Miami goes down 3-1, they're not coming back to Boston to win game 5. They're just not. They're coming back to concede the series. And they're going to try and do their best to steal one of these two games to know that they're going to have to go back to Miami. So one of these two games is going to be close. Like, one of these two games is going to come down to the end. It's going to come down to execution. And that's where you're going to get the chance to see, is Tatum going to get the ball? Is Brown going to get the ball? Is it going to go to Jrue Holiday in the post? Are we going to try and get Kristaps going from three? Like, I don't know what their plan is going to be, but one of these two games is going to be close. And we'll see what the Celtics do at the end of those games. Like, this is where you're going to establish yourself as the favorite when you get to the finals, if you make it to the finals.
There's a take. I love it. You just said something along the lines of figuring out who you're going to be or whatever. What is going on in the NFL, Dave? Because I don't think we'll talk NFL in the rest of the show. Bo Nix getting drafted by Denver is such a head scratcher to me. I'm like, that is going to go down as one of the all-time worst picks of all time. They already have, what's his name, the lefty Tim Tebow that they drafted in the first round years ago, Josh McDaniels took. That's one of the worst picks of all time, even though I liked him. Bo Nix, I predict, will be even worse. I don't think he's going to have any success whatsoever in the NFL.
And Bo Nix, I think, is the same age as Zach Wilson. Right, Zach Wilson's been in the league for 3 or 4 years. Terrible. He's very old. A few of these quarterbacks now are very, very old. Michael Penix going with the 8th pick. I don't understand what's happening in the NFL. I think that this is really an opportunity for one of these small market teams to actually really grow their brand. Right? Like, everybody's so bent on trying to find the next offensive talent. Even Kansas City with Xavier Worthy. I'm like, you're watching all these, the trades that happen, it's like all for offensive players. Listen, defense has won in the NFL for years. I know the league has changed, but it hasn't changed that much. You know who's won all the recent Super Bowls? Tom Brady and Pat Mahomes. They were the best quarterbacks. You're not going to draft Tom Brady and Pat Mahomes unless you get lucky. Right? So why would you be spending all of your assets trying to run, you're trying to win the offensive game when you're not going to beat Patrick Mahomes on offense? You're going to beat him on defense like Cincinnati did in the playoffs a couple of years back.
I totally agree with you, Dave. A defensive player did not get taken last night, I don't think, until pick number 13. We got about 10 to 20 seconds. How do you want to wrap things up?
You're right. The first one was 15. I think it was Liatu Latu out of UCLA. I think the NFL is going to be a lot of fun this year. I'm looking forward to the draft tonight, seeing what the Patriots can do in rounds 2 and 3.
Yep, first pick of second round pick for the Patriots, Dave. We going offensive lineman or wide receiver?
I think Adonai Mitchell, Texas.
There we go. We got a pick on the board for my brother Dave. Thanks for calling the show today. We'll be right back with Sully to talk Bruins here on the Sports Machine with Slim, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire, Talk Radio. My brother Dave ended last segment telling people he feels the game on Saturday between the Celts and Heat will go under the total, 204. And I will remind people, as well as my brother Dave just reminded me, he did accurately give out the winner. He predicted the winner of the Kentucky Derby last year, Mage, at 22-1 odds. He was telling everybody for months. Actually, and more so for the days leading up to the Kentucky Derby, that Mage would be the winner. The Kentucky Derby is a week from Saturday, and MBD will be on the airwaves next week, and hopefully treat us to another 22-1 shot winner, if at all possible. Right now, we got Sully. Bruin Sully is on the line. Sully, would you bet the Kentucky Derby on a normal year? Will you this year, a week from Saturday?
Honestly, don't know a single thing about the Kentucky Derby.
Based on me telling you that last year, MBD gave out a 22-1 winner on last year's Kentucky Derby, would you potentially be open to playing whatever he gives for a prediction on this coming year's Kentucky Derby?
Whoever he says the winner's going to be, I'll ride with that.
Behold the power of the Sports Machine with Slim. Sully, let's do some prognosticating on what's going to happen over the remainder of this Bruins-Toronto Maple Leaf series. It's been so much fun so far.
Oh, it's been such a good series. Game 4 is going to be pivotal, obviously. You know, if the Bruins can take this win in Toronto and have a chance to close it out in Game 5 in home, in Boston, I like those odds, but we can't forget the Bruins also had a 3-1 series lead on Florida last year and definitely blew that one too. So the series isn't over until it's over.
Underdog mentality, it's important, it's necessary for this Bruins team and our Bruins fan base. We need to stay hungry like an underdog. And I will say, Sully, just to look at the other series that are going on, I wanted to make sure I don't forget this. Florida beat the Lightning last night. They're up 3-0. The Hurricanes beat the Islanders last night. They're up 3-0. Tonight, the Rangers play Washington. The Rangers are up 2-0. This might be the only series that extends a long ways out. Let's keep that mentality. And guess what? If we can move forward, everybody's going to be saying that we're going to be the underdog next series to Florida, and that's exactly where we want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the big storylines coming into potentially the Bruins making it to round two was that Florida and Tampa were going to beat up on each other. And right now, it's just Florida taking it to Tampa. So if Florida can close this thing out in 4 games and get the sweep, they're going to be well rested for the Bees coming into round two. And the Bruins might be the team that's really beaten down. I don't know if that's going to be that much of an X factor. I think that's the Bruins' style of play as it is, and I think that having them going through that in round one, taking on a rested Florida, and kind of throwing that weight around in round two if they make it there, is actually going to play to the Bruins' benefit.
I love it. That's what we just stay hungry, stay focused. So game four, you and me talked the other day. Are you still on the sway train? I'm still staying Ullmark. And Montgomery hasn't tipped his hand about who's starting yet, has he?
Oh, no. He won't tip his hand until the starting goalie skates out there for warm-ups. I'm still on train Swayman. If it's Ullmark, I won't be upset. Ullmark played phenomenal in game two. It's not his fault that the Bruins took the loss in that one. My gut feeling tells me Swayman. My head is telling me Swayman, but I mean, who knows? Montgomery could stick with the system and just go back and forth. We could see Ullmark in game four, and that would not surprise me.
I love that Montgomery is willing to put all the pressure on him, and that's why I want him to stay with this rotation. Keep it on him. Let's see how Ullmark plays in game four. For you, we know what the storyline is going to be going, you know, after game four, right? We know it's going to be goalie discussion. However the result plays out, that's what people will be talking about headed into game five. But what's the biggest storyline for you, minus the goalies, moving into game four tomorrow?
Honestly, it's the depth scoring, and you see the numbers with Jake DeBrusk. I believe total in his career against Toronto in the playoffs, I believe it's somewhere around 14 points in 16 games. A big criticism of Jake DeBrusk all season long and really throughout his career is that he's a streaky player. And the fact that we've seen him already, I believe he has 5 points through these 3 games against Toronto. He's a giant X factor in the offensive structure of this team going forward in this series and in the playoffs as a whole. And if he can keep it up, we'll continue to see offensive success against Ilya Samsonov and the Toronto Maple Leafs. But another X factor as well, you have to look at Patrick Maroon kind of canceling out Ryan Reeves and the game that Ryan Reeves plays. He's kind of the physical answer to Reeves in that bottom six of Toronto, and he's doing it well.
I know you watch the games with a more trained eye than I do because I have not been a long time, in detail, NHL hockey fan. But I will say, I was talking with somebody yesterday, Sully, and they said that Maroon, they kind of compared his actions on the ice almost to that of like a shark swimming in an area, just kind of looking for what school is out there and putting them in different directions, waiting for the big hit, which we didn't see really big hits from him in game three. But she told me he's almost out there playing a different game than the other four players he's on the ice with. Are you seeing that, like, from a coaching standpoint? Is Montgomery giving him the leeway to just kind of, hey, just throw your weight around it and make people scared? Or have you noticed that at all?
I would say that's a good comparison. I think the way that Montgomery and the Bruins coaching staff wants Maroon to exist is by being a physical force, creating space out there, wreaking havoc. And you saw, he also does, like, you definitely don't expect him to score. If he scores, that's a bonus. He's capable of it, and it's great, but that's not his main purpose. You saw it especially in game one, opening up the scoring for the Bruins. He played the body, freed the puck up, got the puck to Boakvist that led to the 2-on-1 for Johnny Beecher to open up the scoring for the Bruins in game one. And that's what you see from Maroon. He's out there, he's throwing his weight around, he's being intimidating, and he's clearing lanes for the guys on the ice who can and who are expected to score to do that. I think you're going to see a lot of secondary assists from him. He'll open up the play for the guys of speed, the guys of skill, to really do their job and create offense. And that's what we've seen so far. So I think in terms of Maroon and the way that he plays and the way that his structure is expected in that fourth line with Beecher and Boakvist he's doing it very, very well. He knows his role. He has that experience. I believe it was Marchand, or it might have been Jake DeBrusk. One of them was quoted in saying, you know, as soon as he came in here, he doesn't speak up, but when he talks, you listen, because he has that three-time Stanley Cup champion experience. He has the playoff leadership. He's a veteran in the league, and he's been here. He's done that. He knows what he's talking about. And that experience alone, just him being in the locker room and his voice being heard, is another aspect of Patrick Maroon that I don't think gets talked about enough.
I heard Carlo said something great about him, too, just being there and his presence, his upbeatness, and knowledge that he brings to the table. And plus, remember, Domi the other day intentionally ran into Swayman, right? Somebody said, I think it was Montgomery, actually, the coach said that Maroon made sure to go up and down the bench to make sure that everybody knew that Domi had kind of run at Swayman.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you saw the clip either, but it was in between the whistles. So during the commercial break, obviously after what you just said, when he ran into Swayman, knocked him down, Patrick Maroon was freaking out. He was yelling. He was screaming. He was telling Mitch Marner to keep his head up. So that kind of leadership and that kind of
toughness,
almost enforcer-type role, yes,
yeah.
and toughness is what you need in the playoffs. And you can't be letting, you know, Max Domi taking runs at your, you know, number one, number two star, however you want to put it. He's undefeated against Toronto. He's trying to get into Swayman's head. It's not going to happen. Domi can try his best to do it. It's not going to work. And Patrick Maroon wants to make sure that everybody, not only in Toronto or on the Toronto side of things, but also on the Bruins side of things, that's not going to fly, especially with him in the lineup. Not going to happen, and there's going to be a price to pay for him doing that.
Way to go, Sully. Thanks for the contribution today. Everybody, keep your head on a swivel to watch Pat Maroon's performance in game four. We'll head into commercial. We'll be right back here. I know the Pistol has some stuff he wants to talk about, the soft NBA, but we love his fiery discussions here. When we return from break, WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Sully right there, the discussion about the Bruins, and in particular Pat Maroon, number 61 for the Bruins, Pat Maroon. He is a hulk of a man, and that way that Sully described his role on the ice made me think during commercial break, the Bruins historically have had a tough time, especially in last year's playoffs, have had a tough time clearing the puck out of their zone, like going into the corners, taking the puck away from the forwards from Toronto, and then successfully, like, having the patience to make the right pass to get it out of the zone. We're getting the puck turned over way too many times last year. Game three, not at all. But you know what? Pat Maroon's presence down the other end of the ice, this is what made me think. If you're a defenseman and you're in the corner from Toronto trying to fish that puck away from somebody, like, you're fair game. And if you do get the puck and you're turning to look up the ice, you're going to be like looking out and be like, where's Maroon? Is he coming for me? The shark that's swimming and just kind of looking around. This guy, you know, he's going to, his presence is going to make you play just a little bit faster. And I wonder if that's the effect this guy can have moving forward on all these other teams, or at least on Toronto in game four. I wonder if that's what's happened, and I haven't even noticed it, but I'm going to stay tuned and to the TV set watching Pat Maroon and where he is on the ice every time he steps on there for the Boston Bruins in game four against Toronto. I'm also going to stay tuned, as I know you have, for the Pistol to come and make his entrance into the show on a Friday.
Slim, if MBD's going to be acting like a sassy bandit, I may just be forced to draw my pistol.
Well, there, you might be forced to. I will say his comment about you sitting on your couch making predictions did make me think of, Ma, the meatloaf, we want it. I never know what she's doing in there. Do you feel like a man from Wedding Crashers, the movie, just sitting on his mom's couch waiting for her to warm you up lunch while you like pretend consider what types of picks you may make in the future, but more just like shoot down other people's picks?
Well, there's nothing more fun than making fun of MBD when he makes a bad pick. But I love throwing my picks out there. Sometimes they don't hit. And I think it's very similar to your Chicago pick earlier in the NBA playoff play-in.
I'm horrible. We know this. We know this. And I'm just going to stop making predictions, although I do think the Celtics will win at least one game in Miami. They're favored by 9 in Game 3. What do you think happens in Game 3? Is there any coaching or, like, you know, in-depth stuff going through the mind of the Pistol that coaches should pay attention to or teams should pay attention to heading towards that game?
I mean, the biggest thing I think for the Celtics is pretty obvious from the last game. It's all on the defensive side of the ball. I think they need to get up on the shooters. They need to play one-on-one defense without a ton of switching, fight through the screen, and they need to play with energy, right? Like, it's not like the Heat are not going to give you this game. You're going to have to take the game. I think a good example is the Knicks versus Philadelphia last night. Like, both teams play with a ton of energy. They're going after every loose ball. They're trying to do everything to win the game.
How did Joel Embiid not get thrown out of the game in that first quarter last night?
Oh, when he grabbed the legs of Hartenstein, that was a pretty bad
Mitchell
play.
Robinson. I mean, Mitchell Robinson was literally going up for a shot, Pistol, and he's 5 feet from the basket. He's jumping up in the air. While he's jumping in the air, you have Embiid obviously noticeably grabbing at his legs. You can't do that.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think what it is, the NBA can't lose Embiid out of that game, right? Like, it really ruins the game if you kick him out. But that's a horrible play by him. And, you know, we're starting to see those kind of plays in the playoffs, right? Like, it already happened once to Tatum.
You just can't have that stuff happen from a human to human being type of situation. I've played basketball for too many years. That's a dangerous play. You cannot, I don't care how mad you are that there wasn't a call that was made, you thought you had an offensive foul drawn, it didn't happen. You can't, if somebody had just elbowed you in the face, well, hey, that's one thing. But there was just hard, rough-nosed basketball being played. Not, I'm going to end somebody's career type of thing. And that's what can happen when you grab somebody's leg when they jump in the air.
Yeah, something much more serious could happen. And honestly, Mitchell Robinson did get hurt in that game. I think he's got a sprained left ankle. That's a huge loss for the Knicks because they need somebody to stand in front of Embiid. Hartenstein got in a lot of foul trouble yesterday, and they ended up playing Achiuwa, you know, 10 to 15 minutes in that game. And Achiuwa is way at a huge size disadvantage.
Yeah, it just goes back to the money side of things. I opened up the show today talking a little bit about money and being an underdog. And just like the rich elites think they can do whatever they want, dude. Like that NBA call, that's an NBA decision. When you go to review that play and you're going to say what level of technical or whatever it is, and you take all the time and it goes to the review board, dude, it's Adam Silver. It's the people at the top of the NBA saying, no, we need to keep Embiid on the court because if they lose, they might go down 3-0, and we're not going to make all this extra money. That's just another example of like how the rich people think they can do whatever they want in this country. That something like that. Maybe I'm too fired up, but I am fired. I'm sick and tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing would be if that was reversed, in it were Embiid going up for the shot,
yeah,
and Mitchell Robinson grabbing him, what happens to Mitchell Robinson?
Right? Exactly.
Is he kicked out of the game or out of, you know, out of the game, out of the next game? Who knows? So I think that's the thing, is like, what's the catch 22, right? It's like, does Embiid have preferential treatment? The one thing I will say is Embiid played his butt off yesterday. He was hitting from range. He hit a bunch of three-pointers. He shot way over 50%. He was unbelievable. He basically willed that team to victory.
Yeah, and you know why that happened, Pistol? Because he's like inside of his mind. He's almost outside of his mind, knowing that that was a cheap shot, knowing he's going to get called out for it in the media, and knowing that, like, I need to just play harder and make up with it and just dial in. Like, he hit four threes in the third period, whatever. He was just next level. But it's because of the internal motivation that he gained from knowing he was a blatant cheap shot artist. And I got no respect. I used to like Joel Embiid. I'm done with rooting for that guy from now moving forward. You cannot make a play like that. I'm sorry.
I think that's just playoff basketball, him trying to save a bucket for his team, right?
No.
Is what it comes down to. But it was a dirty, dirty play. And, you know, now it wasn't because of that play, but now Mitchell Robinson might be out for next game.
Yeah. So I don't want to hijack the rest of your time. So what else do you want to talk about? You just want to go NBA? You want to do Patriots draft? What do you think?
Quick thing on the NBA. Yesterday we were talking about Porzingis is minus 32 on his plus minus. So I decided I was going to go through the last night's game. One of the games was a 38-point loss, right? And I'm like, well, the plus minuses in that game must be terrible. Is anybody below the minus 32? And sure enough, we got Hartenstein was a minus 24th for the Knicks. And when I watched that game, I thought Hartenstein played well. Even the announcers were talking about how well he was playing.
Yeah, but no, that was 125 to 114 was the 76ers. The 38-point loss was the Magic and the Cleveland game. But go ahead.
Right, so Lakers are Hachimura was at a minus 12. And then in the 38-point loss, LeVert was a minus 29. So we still haven't seen anybody exceed the minus 32. We got three games tonight. Let's see if it happens.
How was the unicorn minus 32 in a 10-point loss? I mean, and I just don't know what's going to be different, because the shots he was taking, like, those are the ones he was making during the regular season. But really, do we want a 7'4" man out there jacking up threes? I kind of don't.
No. I mean, I don't know if I see Embiid as his primary areas of scoring are mid-range jump shots, and he has some post moves, right? And he can take guys off the dribble for his size. But when he's jacking up the threes, I think it may be related to the knee injury, right? He's not very mobile right now. It's really noticeable. And he may just be like settling for those shots, right? Because he doesn't have a better shot that he can get.
Yeah, I'm fine with Joel Embiid when he's hot doing this stuff, and he was out of his mind. Anybody can get hot like that. I could get hot like that, just start making threes for, you know, 2 minutes, and then you come down to reality. I just don't know if moving forward, if we want Kristaps Porzingis shooting 4, 5, 6, 7 threes a game, I mean, is that going to be our recipe for long-term success?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, a lot of people think he's the X factor for the Celtics in the playoffs, but, you know, points that they never used to really get from that position are now going to come. In my mind, it's like, if he can stand up defensively to some of these teams that have good centers and then provide offense, you know, from the 3-point line in terms of just hitting open ones, then he's a big X factor for them.
So,
but the thing is, that team needs to play with some energy.
You said it. Let's see if they can do it. Your prediction for game 3. We got to call you out on it. You got to give us a prediction. Who wins, Miami or the Celtics?
I like the Celtics in game 3, Miami to pull out game 4, and we go tied 2-2 to Boston for game 5.
You heard it, the Pistol live and direct from his mom's couch. The Boston Celtics will win game 3, Miami Heat game 4. Thank you very much, Pistol, as we wrap up the show today. We're looking forward to an incredible weekend. The Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio. We'll be back next week, 14:50 a.m., 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com.